Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out and I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Sub-Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, this is the Betches Sub-Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, a comedian and writer of the Betches Sub newsletter for a little while longer.
And I'm Millie Tamaris, comedian and sub video contributor.
That little pause there, Elise, I was like, I thought we had two more weeks. She's just here for moral support today.
For a little while longer.
Yes, yes, yes. In case you did not listen to our episode last week or see any of our posts, we did announce that the podcast is going to be taking a bit of a hiatus, and Millie and Elise are moving on to some new opportunities. So their last podcast with us will be next week, September 28th, and then we'll pop off for a little hiatus. For more information about that, definitely listen to that episode, and we will be checking in more and doing some fun like retrospective stuff in some of the upcoming episodes. But to start today, the question I want to ask you both most urgently this morning is that have you heard there is a missing fighter jet in the air somewhere with no pilot? And no, but no, they don't know where.
I didn't know it didn't have a pilot. Also, I mean, yeah,
plot twist.
I guess the premise of it being missing means no one knows where, right?
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that I, as I was doing the newsletter this morning, I learned. And I guess it would be more nefarious if we were like, there's a missing jet and it has a pilot. I'd be like, oh, no.
That's true.
Where's he headed? But there is something crazy about the idea that it's just flying around up there. Where's it going?
And the fact that,
like, is it going to crash?
That's what I'm really worried about. If it has not crashed already, so it's like right now, sort of like, oh, it's just. I would think that we talk all the time about how the United States military is really like this has the height of capabilities, can do anything, and I'm like, you don't know where the fighter jet is. Apparently, it's like black box is not working. The pilot ejected themselves because of a mishap. I don't know why I'm laughing. I just wish I could do that. Just eject myself generally from a situation.
The pilot's fine, so, you know.
The pilot, we don't know what happened to the pilot. They ejected themselves, survived, and went to a hospital. It sounds like maybe they're experiencing some sort of medical event. But the jet transponder isn't working, so the government doesn't know where it is, and they've appealed to the public to come forward with any sightings. And, you know, I allow my government to ask a lot from me, but like when they're like, hey, we can't find this jet, I think it's somewhere over South Carolina if it hasn't crashed already.
2 points. This jet costs more than an entire university probably. And also, I mean, you want to talk about child tax credit and what could be used, like this fucking missing jet absolutely could have covered child tax credit. On top of that, I'm just saying, as we're talking about strikes in Hollywood, AI is not always better. And no. Tom Cruise would never get, like Maverick and none of those Top Gun motherfuckers would ever go missing like this. But I was thinking that, I'm like, RIP Amelia Earhart. We don't know where that bitch is still. So I don't know. Women's rights, women's wrongs.
Millie,
AI.
Your brain.
My brain.
Just two very distinct thoughts crystallized immediately. Yeah, you're right. This plane costs $156 million and they can't find it. Like the fundamental thing that every plane does where you're supposed to be able to know where it is, they don't know where it is.
$156 million. Wow.
To lose a plane. I mean, I know that like these like fighter jets are supposed to like they're supposed to be stealth. They have like stealth capabilities and all this shit. So I'm like, What do you think, like, people on the, yeah, like, you made it so that we can't see it like that. So why are you going to now say, tell people in South Carolina, like, hey, look up and let us know if you see this thing that we, like, kind of made invisible. It's not on us to find this plane.
I mean.
No way.
If ever there was a job for the Chinese balloon.
That's a great mashup. The pilotless fighter jet and the Chinese spy balloon.
And I'm going to throw in the stuck boat. It's giving me stuck boat energy as well. All right. Well, before we get into it today, I'm curious about you guys' weekends. I'm going to start referring to, illicit behavior as synonymous with the Republican congresswoman or elected who has come to represent that behavior. So wondering if you guys pulled any Lauren Boberts or Kristi Noems this weekend. Instead of saying second base, I think we should start saying, did you go to Lauren Boebert in a movie theater?
Okay, wait, because what's second base to you? Because now I'm like, okay, what's going on?
Well, I guess we don't know what happened in the video. I mean, okay, so the video definitely shows him fondling her breasts. For sure.
And her giving an over the pants, HJ.
You guys saw that?
But our HJ's, yeah. Well, you didn't see that?
Well, she grabs his crotch. The hand is going into the crotch region.
Maybe it wasn't to completion, but there was some tugging.
Yeah, it was a Bill Clinton. It was the Bill Clinton approach.
Her hand was moving in the area of his crotch. I mean, I do think that there is a question, because for me, I would say second base is feeling someone up. That was my understanding as a child.
Home is sex. First base is kissing. Second base, and then third base is mouth stuff.
Yes, but I don't know where a hand.
This is where everyone finds out I'm a virgin.
Yeah. Millie's like, wait, hold on, let me write this down.
Yeah, all the times you've referenced taking Plan B, you were just fucking around.
I just like the taste. And the Mexican tastes a little bit spicy. It makes me feel. No, because for a long time, hookup, I thought like hookup meant just kissing someone or messing around, and then hookup with people are like, no, fucking. So I just want to make sure I'm on the same
age,
page.
It just shifts. I think at around like 19, it shifts from everything but to like, if you hooked up, we all know what's happening. You're doing what Governor, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is apparently doing with former Trump aide Corey Lewandowski.
You're asking us, sorry, to go to the first question. You're asking me and Elise if we went to a Denver production of Beetlejuice and got our titties felt up while we did an over the pants. It's shame. I'm going to say, unfortunately, no.
I was thinking more in a general sense. Like,
did we do hand stuff this weekend? Now, I had a lot of birthday parties to go to.
Got it. And no sleeping with married men this weekend that are not your husband.
I mean, at least slept with a married man, but it was her
He's
husband.
Married to me,
he was married to her, so I don't know if that counts.
Mm-hmm. I was going to add Sarah Huckabee Sanders in here, but I just felt like the employing child labor was just in a different.
Child labor. I will say, not me, but one time I saw a seamless delivery person that did look underage. Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean? Like,
that's a bummer.
That's probably the biggest possibility out of all for where I'm at in my life right now.
They're just like
us. I'm given a Sarah Huckabee Sanders rising. A Sarah Huckabee Sanders son.
Beautiful. All right. So the Daily Mail is out with a report. It's only from the Daily Mail, which, like, when I don't like what they say is wrong. When I like what they say, I think they are Pulitzer worthy reporters.
Horoscopes, baby.
Exactly. They are claiming that Republican South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has carried on a secret affair with Trump aide Corey Lewandowski. So this is like a Trump aide that I think even Trump fired. He's like gotten in trouble for like being like getting physical with multiple people, screaming in people's faces. This is not a good dude. And these two people are conservative family values proponents. They have like 50 years of marriage and 7 children between them. I don't know why. In the article about
not the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, the article about Lewandowski, it kept referring to his wife as a 9/11 widow, like over and over again. So like, it was just every single time, it was just like her main descriptor. So like, that's part of his like Republican cachet, is that he married a 9/11 widow.
He married someone who was right. affected by 9/11. That's so only in crazy. The Republican world could that yes. be like, and look what I've done.
Like, patriot. What?
Right. Is there any Democratic equivalent? It would just be like, I don't know, met Obama once or like.
Yeah. Or marrying, honestly, like. Dating Rosario Dawson.
Mm. Yeah.
That's, there
I'm
it is.
Dating
there
Rosario
it is.
Dawson.
But apparently these guys have been carrying on an extramarital affair for years. It's like an open secret. Everybody knows. The first time these rumors came out was actually surfaced by a Republican blog. Me neither. Surfaced by a Republican blog. And now the Daily Mail is out with them. Kirstie Noem says these rumors are false and that she is proud of the God-fearing family that she raised with her husband, which is just like a bizarre flex. I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Okay. I was sorry. I looked up her book and I want you guys to guess the title.
Oh, Kirstie Noem's book?
Oh.
Kirstie Noem's book. She's on a horse and she's holding the American flag.
Okay.
Freedom's in there.
Freedom? Yeah. You say freedom?
I think freedom is in there somewhere.
I'm going to say
freedom
Mama
to lead.
Freedom.
Mama Freedom. I want you to be a little on the nose.
Okay.
A cliche that's on the nose.
I mean, Amanda just said freedom to lead. Freedom, I feel like freedom to lead is really good.
That's good. That's good.
Lipstick on a pig.
Lipstick on a pig. All right. Title. Not My First Rodeo.
Wow.
Lessons from the Heartland.
Oh, wow.
Of course. Wow, of course.
And it has her on the fucking, on a fucking horse.
Incredible.
Apparently neither of them denied this affair too. Like they reached out and then they didn't deny it.
Yeah, I feel like this is such a random pairing that it rings true to me because I feel like if someone was going to make it.
Totally.
If someone was going to make up that Kirstie Noem was having an affair, I don't think they would pick Corey Lewandowski. They would pick someone with a little more cultural cachet now, you know?
And can I be honest? I'm looking at her husband. I'm looking at Corey Lewandowski. I'm looking at Byron Noem. This is what I say. I would say if there was an audition, these guys would be at the same audition. They're in the same genre, same type. They're looking very similar. Definitely given. I mean, they would audition for like Cole's dad on like Memorial Day sale for the IZODE polo shirt, like advertisements.
Absolutely.
But they are both, they're both head to head. They're both getting callbacks. You know what I mean? They both look alike. So, Chris,
maybe they're
that
a triple. Maybe this is a polycule. And maybe that's why they're not denying it.
And it's not, guess what? Not her first rodeo. Not her first rodeo. the first lesson from the Heartland is to know what you like and go
and
for it.
And she's really angling to be Trump's VP. She's like, she's asking for it. She's begging for it. And I think that they definitely have that in common. And it was making me think of the conversation we had last week about like, oh no, is Tim Scott single? What would that say about him? And it's like, you have Donald Trump who has his ex-wife buried in his backyard at his golf club, has like children from multiple women, has had countless extramarital affairs, and then these guys
who, indicted
on like 80 counts.
Well, but indicted specifically for trying to cover up an affair he had with a porn star while married to the woman who was our first lady, who had just had a baby at the time that supposedly took place. So.
And then the top of the shortlist for VP, even in he's like sort of playing coy about it, but she's definitely going for it, and he hasn't ruled it out, is this woman who now is accused of having a many years long affair with one of his top aides. It doesn't matter. His voters won't care. I don't think this will move them in either direction.
I'm scared because when I clicked on the book on Amazon, it showed up suggested other products, and one of them was a hat that said, Kirstie Noem 2024. So it's enough in people's head that there's a product made of it. I just hope I'm not served that product between my chafing stick and you know, European adapters that can
fix that algorithm, Jeff. Fix that algorithm. Today's episode of American Fever Dream is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. It's Nuuly.
Newly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Newly is a subscription rental service, and for just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You get fast, free shipping and returns and professional cleaning in Newly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. No laundry for you to worry about. This is the best. You just put it back in your box, send it out, and before you know it, you've got your next one. And you always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. I bought the Rachel Antonoff pasta puffer from them. I was obsessed with it, like everybody who tries it is, and it was completely sold out everywhere else. So I felt like I really, really had an in there. So thank you, Newly. Newly is an amazing value at $98 a month for any six styles. And right now you can get $20 off your first month of Newly when you sign up with the code FEVERDREAM20. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Newly with two U's, and enter the code FEVERDREAM20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Newly with two U's with code FEVERDREAM20. Newly subscription clothing rental, change your clothes.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
We will go to our number segment. Today's number is 12,000. That's around how many auto workers are on strike today, the fourth day after the United Auto Workers Union authorized strikes targeting three U.S. assembly plants connected to big three automakers. And the main demands here are over wages, as always, but they're also asking for shorter work weeks, better benefits, and stronger job security. So a lot of these workers make $20 an hour while their executives make tens of millions of dollars. Wages have not increased with inflation, but executive pay has gone up exorbitantly. And these workers kind of find themselves in the position that many Americans do, which is that they work full time. They work 40 hours a week, and they can't buy a home. They can't support a family without taking on a second job. And a lot of people that have been in this field for a very long time, like, their wages haven't gone up, but inflation has. They used to be able to make a decent living with these wages, and they're not able to. And they're seeing younger people start in the industry and not be able to too. That's what's been really inspiring about this strike in particular, and it's probably a feature among all of them, but there's specific things here that auto workers now don't have that other generations used to. And it's really heartening to see the older generations say that they're out there striking to kind of reclaim some of those. Because specifically, these workers are asking for an end to a tiered wage and benefit system. This subjects newer employees to worse pay and benefits. So that means that new employees and temporary employees, they get worse pay for the exact same work. Temporary employees are kept in temporary status for, it sounds like, way too long. They're functioning as full-time employees, but they're just kept in a temporary status, which means they don't get bonuses. They miss out on a lot of things. And then it also takes full-time employees years to earn the benefits that their colleagues got automatically if they started decades ago. And that's because around the 2008 recession, a lot of automakers were like nearly bankrupt. The industry was going to completely go up in flames. So the union signed a deal with a ton of concessions in an attempt to okay, we'll do our part to try to help keep the industry afloat. And these concessions are kind of still here. And a lot of the striking workers, like I said, are older, and they're really motivated to get that same deal back and to get it for younger, newer employees that they had when they started in the industry. And obviously, executive pay has recovered since the 2008 recession, but the fact that this system is still there. So a lot of what the auto companies are saying is they're like, we're willing to negotiate on wages, but some of this we just can't do. We just can't take the hit. And then you see these people taking home, $20 million paychecks. It's like, it's really just, emblematic of what we're seeing through a lot of strike movements and a lot of successful kind of employee-led movements, which is that people are very aware of and disgusted by corporate greed and starting to understand the scale of it. And when these companies say, we can't do it. We can't. It's too tight. It's too tight if you insist on making $20 million a year as a single individual who sits at a desk all day, and these people are doing back-breaking work, and you make them work for years and years and years to get any health care.
Well, yeah. And it's also, I feel like one of the other similarities between all the strikes is just people realizing that, again, these these corporations will take advantage of any new technology, changing circumstance, et cetera, to try to make jobs that were once decent livings for people into gig work that will be unstable and unsustainable for the rest of their life so that they can fiddle with profit margins and keep their bonuses and do all that stuff. And it's just like, it's just funny when it's like, we talk about all these people who say like, make America great again or whatever. The time that they're talking about were time periods where an auto worker made a very dignified and decent living. And they had union protections that were really, really strong. And like, you could support a family on an auto worker's salary and have a really nice life and retire with that. And that's the same for like all of these different strikes that we're seeing. These used to be jobs where you had to work hard just like anybody else, but you could make a decent living. And corporations have exploited any sort of opportunity that they can to chip away at that. And now people are saying like, no, I'm not going to do the same work for less money and less stability and less benefits. We're not doing that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, especially given the auto workers, which I think is different than, you know, at least the Hollywood strikes or something, is that the unique thing with the auto workers is, I think you mentioned earlier, Amanda, they signed a shittier contract just to retain jobs in America because they were outsourcing so many jobs. Mm-hmm. And as things gotten better, yeah, like they want to get better conditions. Where, you know, so it's just interesting as we talk about the models of Hollywood and the model of writer's strike and all that. Like, the unique issue is that if a show does really well and they profit, and like something like Wednesday, where it's like top fucking Netflix pick in like 100 countries, those writers don't get a cent more. But then people are like, yeah, but if it did really bad, they wouldn't share in the in the company losing money. But it's like, they do. They get mass layoffs. That's how these companies were able to finagle this union signing a shitty deal in 2008. But that's the thing, is like, when companies do well, who's the one that makes the money out of that? It's the investors. It's the, you know, CEOs, it's the C-suites, all those people, and the actual people who are at risk of getting laid off, who are at risk, or like, they don't see any. So it's just like, what is the benefit of them working hard? You've like left no incentive for them not to get fired another day. Like, it's just, you know, it's just coming to a head, like all of this natural thing where it's like all these Republican politicians, and I'm not just Republican, but a lot of Republican politicians really did a lot of work to gut unions, to cancel, to make it harder to unionize and all of that. And just, it's taken 20, 30 years. And now it's just resurging back because people are not idiots. You know what I mean? You can't just expect people to accept shitty conditions for the rest of their lives. Like, I just, there's no long game. It's like, so your family can get another boat or another yacht, or you can get another $50,000 a year. You're gonna not, you know, somebody can't afford to fucking put food on the table. Or like Jeff Bezos's employees are pissing in cans and water bottles in a factory so that he can have another fucking boat with Lauren Sanchez's body on the bow. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean,
that is what it, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's really cool to see Democrats really standing up, you know, again, as we talk about Republican populism and how that's becoming more attractive to people, for people to vote Republican. The only consistent voice, and this is another thing Democrats have to do a better job of publicizing, but like, at least what I'm seeing, I'm only seeing Democratic politicians on the lines with strikers.
Union workers, yeah.
I haven't seen one Republican on any, at any strike.
Well, they can't be seen there by their donors, yeah.
Yeah, local, and there are Democrats, I mean, Biden even saying we stand with our workers. That is so radical. And that, so when people are like, it's the same, all these people are the same, blah, 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 blah. It's like, it's not true. Yeah. There's only one party out there at any fucking strike, no matter what, big or small. And we know which one it is. So that's just the end of my point.
That's a lot of empathy for auto workers from a woman who famously hates cars. So we really appreciate.
You know, but honestly, you know, if we want to, we don't want to get into it because Elise is reading Robert Moses' book and all that shit. But, you know, this country fucking, because of big auto and all that shit, destabilized, like made public transportation systems shitty and made our whole country like reliant on cars. And then they're not paying workers and they're not, you know, whatever. We can get into it. So,
we'll do that on the last episode. Maybe last episode, we just give our takes. I was thinking for the last episode, we maybe just like do like a rapid fire and we give takes of like some things that we like maybe haven't, there's not really things we haven't touched for any real reason. Like, we don't really have controversial opinions, but I think it would just be funny to do like rapid fire. Like, what are your takes?
Well, there's things that we're all impassioned about.
Yes.
I would love to hear more about
that. Absolutely. That we never got to.
Petting Joe Manchin.
No, all right, into the main news now. To start the main news, we just have like a little smattering of headlines here. It is Climate Week in New York City. World leaders will convene at the UN this week for the General Assembly. This week is also the UN Climate Ambition Summit, so that's going to be like a really big focus. There was a massive protest in New York City over the weekend where around 50,000 people, that's like the low estimation, gathered to demand swifter action on climate change, specifically to reduce dependence on fossil fuels. Many of the young protesters had sharp and well-earned criticisms for Joe Biden, whose administration has continued to approve oil and gas drilling projects. You know, as I was reading about this, I was thinking that, like, this is another group that tends to vote Democrat, and we take that for granted, but they're really reminding leaders that they can't count on their support if they're not going to take radical action to protect the planet. For some reason, Biden isn't attending the UN climate summit this week, and people are annoyed by that. Like, it would be really important to have some U.S. leadership there. So in response to this criticism, administration officials are basically pointing to the landmark climate deal that he got passed, which could have honestly been even bigger were it not for our friend Joe Manchin. And they also point to Joe Biden's recent decision to prohibit drilling across about 13 million acres of federal land in Alaska. Mm-hmm. However, the Willow Project is moving forward. There are some things that are happening and some, you know, increased reliance on fossil fuels and reluctance to really pull the plug. And I think that has to do with gas prices. When I hear people that don't know much about politics and what they're thinking around the election, gas prices come up a lot. And as much as I wish people voted for other reasons, and for us, it's so obvious, maybe because we also don't drive, like that gas, you know, higher gas prices are a decent price to pay to not have like a fascist in power. But I mean, it's one of those things where younger voters are really, really not happy with politicians that aren't going to take radical action on this. And they're really making that known ahead of 2024.
So it's kind of unfortunate that Biden isn't going to be at the UN climate summit. But you failed to mention that Vice President Kamala Harris is going to be there singing "The Wheels on the Electric Bus"
with an auto worker by her side.
With an auto worker next to her. I'm sorry.
He's not going to be at the climate summit, but he's like all around. He was like in the West Village having dinner last night. I don't know if he went to like Via Carota, and then he's going to be at like a Broadway fundraiser tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense because this girl that I know was having like her birthday party and she took these pictures and Joe Biden was there. And I was like, Amanda Corday does not know Joe Biden. But I'm just
where
like,
was it?
Oh, I think it was, but now that makes sense. It's like, I bet you she was at the same restaurant that, like at this restaurant having her birthday dinner, and then Joe Biden and Jill Biden came and they took pictures with them.
And they ordered the same meal.
Mm. Well.
Right.
They ordered the same spaghetti. It is the UN General Assembly this week, so that's he's in New York, but I guess. I don't know why he wouldn't just...
There's just like a specific summit that he's just not going to, which is bizarre, even though the whole theme is climate. And I think he's going to be forced to say something on climate.
Well, yeah. And especially because I do feel like climate is one of the things that he's got, like he touts his climate agenda, mm-hmm. which, you know, in many, like he should do that or whatever. But it's like, it feels like an easy slam dunk to just also as all these protesters are focused on New York for climate reasons, also speak to the UN climate summit. But I mean, yeah, I think that young voters in general are just rightfully very concerned about what we are literally seeing take place on the planet before our very eyes. And we have a Republican Party where the people, the number one candidates for office, won't even say on stage that they believe that climate change is man-made or that anything can be done about it. So maybe Joe Biden just feels like, well, in comparison to that, I don't have to go to the UN exactly. Climate Summit. But that's that's also one of those things where it's like, as good as Joe Biden is on climate, he does still seem behind where we actually need to be. As this should be like really the number one issue of the entire world.
Yeah. Well, Phoenix being 120 degrees for most of the summer all day is alarming.
I mean, you can extract fossil fuels from the people making these decisions. They are that
old. They're old. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good one, Amanda.
Good one, Amanda. Was really good. I salute
Thank you.
Yeah, that was
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I did have that one in my back pocket. We were like, I'm trying to work on like a map where it's like you're charting. Like Dianne Feinstein, I know she's probably voting in favor of climate legislation, but she was born in 1933. The planet was so much cooler then. Like it is absolute bananas. So yeah, I appreciate Let's the kind real, of like
Amanda.
Aggressive.
Is she voting? Is her proxy voting?
She needs to be reminded several times. To vote, but theoretically, yeah.
As long
she
as
is
someone
voting
says,
in favor.
Raise your hand, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand. Then, yeah, she's voting.
Oh, it's so bleak. It's so bleak. All right. So we'll be watching that and watching ongoing criticisms of him and seeing how his, his senior officials kind of communicate that. But Gen Z is very amped about this. And it's just like, it sucks because they're so, like, this generation, like, we know they're going to turn out. They always deliver. And I feel like it means that some of our politicians can sort of get away with not engaging on this issue. But it was interesting when I was looking at the pictures of the protests. Like, it was really all ages. I saw a lot of, like, more senior people out there sort of, like, saying the same strong statement. So there's a lot of votes there's a lot of enthusiasm with this issue. And it's like people might stay home if they don't feel for all of Joe Biden's like issues and people's frustrations with him, if they also don't feel like he's eager enough there.
Well, you know who dies in extreme heat? It's actually like old seniors people. Who are the most susceptible to a lot of this like extreme weather stuff that we're seeing. A lot of times it's older people who can't easily evacuate during hurricanes or other extreme weather events. They get stuck in their house when fucking Texas freezes over randomly and the weather gets all crazy. They are way more susceptible to extreme weather events in general. So it actually makes sense for them to be alarmed.
Yeah, I mean, this is a sensitive subject for me because this is how I lost my grandma. But, you know, she was like on bed rest or, you know, something like that. And because of a hurricane, she had to move locations like too many times and just kind of gave, you know what I mean? And that's like a real reality of like, even people who are very, like, actually people who are old and sick, like they want to be able to stay in one place with like electricity and stuff. And that is something that I'm conscious of. As we get more and more hurricanes, as hurricanes are going, you know, we have a hurricane headed to the Northeast very soon. Like, yeah, it is a young person's issue, but it's absolutely, Elise, you're so right. Like, an older person's,
thing. That would be like a really good way to frame it for voters, especially like we know like older voters are sometimes don't. On average, vote Democrat, but that's like a really interesting angle. All right, next for women's rights and women's wrongs. Today, we have a woman righting her wrong. Drew Barrymore announced over the weekend that she wouldn't be returning to her talk show amid the writers and actors strikes after all. So this announcement followed a 5-minute-long video statement posted earlier in the week. I don't think we ever talked about it, during which Drew apologized to writers and said how deeply sorry she was in a way that you would have thought was leading up to an announcement that she was immediately going to pause her plans. But no, she just said, you know, I'm going to do the show. People need the show right now. The show apparently had already filmed a week of episodes and was set to start airing today on Monday. But Drew posted yesterday that she has listened to the criticisms and decided to pause the show until the strikes end. After the announcement, there were some other shows that were resuming, the Jennifer Hudson Show and The Talk. They also made statements that they were going to pause production. The View and Bill Maher's show are on the air without unionized writers. So, I mean, her pulling back had the exact impact that people said it would. Like, you're setting a standard, and then immediately these others. A couple questions here. I mean, what do you think made her finally change her mind? Because she was so resolute and seeming not to get it. And then finally, I don't know, in the video she posted, she was like, if you think there's a PR operation behind this, there's not. And then maybe her publicist was like, okay, let's get one behind it. And
we actually need a PR operation to become involved post-haste.
Right.
I don't think that Drew Barrymore has faced intense public scrutiny before, but I don't think that she has ever been accused of like selfishness and callousness and kind of like an emotional crime on this level before. And it goes pretty against like who she is publicly at this time in her career. And I do kind of feel like, I think that Drew Barrymore is an adult woman who has her own faculties and is responsible for her own decisions. But I do kind of feel like maybe someone got in her ear and was like, no, we can totally do this and it'll be above board with the strike, and actually you're helping a lot of people. And I think that someone maybe bamboozled her a little bit, and then the intensity of the response unbamboozled her to what was going on.
I think she just went from being like the sweetheart and like this empathetic person who was so brave and valiant, and, you know, thinking that the brave and valiant thing. I also will say, like, I kind of disagree a little bit with Elise, or I'm just like, I think the decision was driven a little bit by ego. Like, you know, it's just kind of like, well, I know that this is, you know, I don't think she wanted to like harm the strike or anything, but she's like, this is above board. We're doing things differently. And I get to save all these people's jobs and all these things. Like, it's kind of like that thinking, like an inflated. And in the, I just found her apology video pretty disturbing.
It was wild. Just like,
it was wild. It was very much, again, inflated ego, and also like comparing, like, well, we created this show, or we did the show under COVID, and those were extenuating circumstances, so we thought, why not do it here? And it's like, this is apples and potatoes. Like, it's just not even in the same shit. And also, yeah, it is like this inflated ego of like, you don't have to be the one to save things.
Yeah,
you don't
that's have what struck me too, is like, she acted like she was bringing back something that we all rely on a day-to-day basis. And I know her show is popular, but she was just like, I can be the thing that gets people through this challenging moment, which, as much as the writers and actors strike is in the mainstream, people are aware of it. Right now, it is still impacting a small percentage of the American population. Like, I'm not sure all your blue collar workers who are really like that pressed about it. Like, it's not the same as COVID. And just this, I don't want to dunk on her too much, because it's like, she did the right thing. But I found that video to be kind of the worst thing she did in the whole thing, because it revealed this, like, it was giving, the fact that she felt like she was this like godlike figure that simply needed to rise to this occasion. And it's like, no, the nation can exist without the Drew Barrymore show for a couple more months. It's fine.
The video was very weird, and it was like 4 minutes long. And you think, I remember like the first 2 minutes, I'm like, and certainly soon she's going to say that she's not bringing the show back. But then it just is like, you realize midway through, you're like, oh no, that's not what she's saying at all. I do feel like there is someone who planted the idea that she could bring the show back ahead of time. But I agree that I think that they also placated her ego by being like, the show is so important. Because you can tell by that statement that, like, she really thinks that she is doing a very serious, like, karmic service mm-hmm. for the universe by putting on her show. Right. And, like, yeah. I think it's a nice show. I think it's great for people to talk about their feelings and to normalize talking about their feelings. But you could tell that, like, she definitely was like, the world needs the Drew Barrymore yeah. show to be back on the air. And it's like, no, mama, yeah. no.
Well, she took a lot of that, those think pieces that were like, Drew Barrymore is amazing because of these deep conversations that she's having with people, you know, talking to Justin Long about like him getting kidnapped or Brooke Shields about to be like, I don't know. It is just like this inflated like self of importance that's like not based in reality. And honey, she got a reality check, baby.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. She figured that shit out. Whereas like Bill Maher's a dick and he doesn't care. I feel like it's less nefarious. I mean, the thing, whether like I don't like Bill Maher, I think he's still like violating strikes. But at least his argument is that he's doing the panel. It's going to be all mm-hmm. panel discussion right. and not like any of the written segments. And The View is basically panel discussion too. So it's literally probably they can get away with like a producer or the research team being just writing up segments and not have or not writing like questions and not necessarily written segments with scripts and stuff. But still, it's still fucked.
Yeah, right, definitely. Yeah, and I think,
well, I just feel like Bill Maher, like, of course fucking Bill Maher is going to come back. And I think it's a similar ego thing where, like, of course Bill Maher thinks he, like, has a vital voice that needs to be on TV when he hasn't made, like, he has not made, like, a prescient point since, like, the mid-90s no. or whatever. Like, he is the most just... here's what I'll say about Bill Maher is I've only ever passed on one writing packet and it was for his show. I said, yeah, I don't
that
even,
says a lot.
Even if yeah. I got the job, I don't, gross. I don't even want to be yeah. part of it.
Oh, well, at least it's better than me because I'll pass on a lot of jobs.
It's the only, well, I guess you're better than me, I think in oh, that yeah, respect, maybe. but his is the only one where I said, that's a job I actually don't fucking need.
Yeah. Well.
That takes us nicely into Our Men Okay. Today, we're discussing a man named Jan Wenner. He is the co-founder of Rolling Stone magazine and is just really famous for his association for his development of Rolling Stone magazine and kind of like being a tastemaker and creating like the kind of like celebrity around rock and roll. He recently wrote a book about some rock and roll icons. It's called Masters, and it features interviews he conducted with artists, including John Lennon, Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, and others while he was running Rolling Stone. White men are the only interview subjects in this book. And when the New York Times asked Wenner why he didn't include interviews with women or people of color, I don't know if he could have given a worse answer. I mean, he could have been more like graphically racist, but he basically said, I just wanted to talk to the people that like, this isn't a direct quote, this part. He was like, I just wanted to talk to the people that I gravitated towards, like the people that I liked that meant something personally to me. But then he said, insofar as the women, just none of them were as articulate enough on this intellectual level. And these interviews are sort of like about rock and roll as a concept. So he was basically saying like, literally the interviewer is sort of like, what are you talking like Carole King, Stevie Nicks, naming all these women. And he's literally, like, no, no, no.
I was
yeah,
like, well, Stevie
not-
Nicks walks this earth for you absolutely. To say that when she is alive and breathing the air. It's like, fuck you, dude.
Completely. And he's like, yeah, yeah, all those people are geniuses. But like, I just basically he's like, they just weren't articulate. Like they couldn't articulate the vibe I was going for. But he said specifically say none of them were as articulate enough on this intellectual level, which that is a direct quote. And that's poorly phrased as hell. As articulate no. enough. Okay, Jan. He went on then to say he thought of people like Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye as geniuses. He's like, no, there's great people. I'm not saying they're not, but they just didn't articulate at the level of, you know, the John Lennons, Bob Dylan, Mick Jaggers of it all. He then said, for public relations sake, he was like, I guess, you know, because of this whole situation, I should have found maybe like one Black and one woman artist to include, even if they didn't rise to like measure up to his like historical standard, which is also interesting because it counteracts what he just said, where he was like, no, 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 they just couldn't talk about rock and roll like I wanted to. And then he says, well, also none of them measured up to the historical standard, which like, I'm pretty sure
yeah.
like, Black people invented rock and roll. He said again, yeah, like he tried to I'm sort of lean sure. into the like, oh, these are just my personal favorites. And so he apologized and basically was like, and you know, I didn't mean to diminish the contributions of women and people of color. Go read the full interview because the stuff that comes out of this guy's mouth, I think you can listen to it too, is bananas. He has since been removed from his leadership position at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which he's also an inductee in. I'm sure his publisher is furious. He released an apology, but like just so many dumb things to say. Just like number one, to have such a narrow, like to have that narrow of a worldview to also be that wrong? It's like, no, nobody's like, you got to add a token Black person and woman. It's like, do you have a grasp of your own subject matter? You, sir, what?
This is like the soft effects of a white supremacist society. I'm sorry. But like, these are all these things where, you know, if you look at the inductees of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like this man being in charge of it and having these views and not even thinking twice to even think about how they would sound to other people, and him being seen as this objective person that's supposed to judge like the accomplishments. There's no wonder it skews more male and more white. And it's because these people, it's the thing of unconscious bias. It's like they don't even think that it's wrong, or they're not questioning themselves. They don't have anyone else in their like, and it's kind of a failing of the fucking book of the publisher to not even have anyone on their staff be like, hey, this book is great. Can you try to find, you know, two or three women or some people of color that we can also include in this book? Like, there's a failure of so
for give that to as an level. Edit, as in like, and like he says, he's like, yeah, I could have just thrown that. It's like, no. It is a factual error for you not to include any people in this category that you've created. It's like you said, I mean, exactly, the soft effects of a white supremacist society. It's like, it's also, this is supposed to be somebody who was the co-founder of Rolling Stone magazine, who presumably has had lots of experiences, has seen lots of the world. And like, he was comfortable enough and he got away with just being like, no, actually only, like for him, he's saying, like only people that speak to my specific interests are articulate. Anything else, that's not articulate. That's not the conversation that's meant to be had. But yet he anoints himself as the person who anoints other masters of rock and roll, and then dares to say like, oh, but they're just not my faves. Ugh.
Well, I mean, it's also, this person is just, the lack of awareness on so many levels is staggering. Like to not know that, to say Black people are inarticulate on any subject, but particularly rock and roll, is like, have you read a book in the last 25 years? Like, when was the last time you engaged in one meaningful discussion that wasn't just you talking? Because for real, like, we talked about this when like fucking Barack Obama was running for president, why we shouldn't be speaking about like Black people in these terms. Not to mention what it means to say, to police the way women speak, and what I feel like is just that, and what he does, what this guy doesn't even realize is that like, what he's actually saying is, oh, women and Black artists don't talk about rock and roll in the exact terms that I consider it. They don't talk about it the exact way that I think about it.
That I relate to.
So, yeah. And so that's being inarticulate, when it's like, no, that's just having a different relationship with this music that's informed by probably their experience that is different from yours. And again, it's just, it is also on the publishers and whoever worked with him on his book, on this book, because it is, I mean, it's egregious not to include women. It's insane not to have talked to one Black artist about rock and roll music. That's it's insane.
And this is the expert. He gets paid. He got probably like $1 million advance. Maybe not that much, yeah. But he got a lot of money to write about, to republish old interviews, honestly.
Yeah. And I'm also just like, he's like, they're not articulator. They're not speaking to shit as I would like to say. Dog, what's your fucking job? Like, is it your job to extract meaning from these interviews and come up with your own synopsis or what, or what you think they mean and stuff? It's like so fucking lazy. Oh, and if it was just a book about, hey, these are some people I liked, and like he made it more like centered himself of like people, but it's.
We'd still honestly, clown on him, but to be like, there still, just simply was not anyone that could speak to this.
And I just. Also, just on a funny, this is just so funny to name a book Master and it be all white men. It's just like, you're not even thinking of any objects. Like, there's just people who walk around like not understanding implications of any word choices or any like that slavery existed at all. Like, just fucking rocks in their brain, like smooth brained.
Well, he's like one of these people that just, because he's old, he's just never going to, he's not going to adjust to society. He's just like, the one I lived in is the one that's just always going to be. And like, I think it's the reason why I think he's nostalgic for a time where the white supremacy was on even clearer display in rock and roll, and where people didn't need to be included, and where people that weren't white men weren't succeeding to the same degree and didn't get the same support. So for him, this is almost like, yeah, like he's clearly nostalgic for a time where people could get away with behaving like this, yet he still does in the year 2023. There was another part of the interview where they're really pressing him on, like, because I don't know if he was like the editor or just they're pressing him on the University of Virginia story from a couple years ago. And he literally has a quote where he says, like, people get so upset about this, but everything about the story was airtight except for the central rape at the heart of it that did not happen. So this is a man that does not like.
What is
and
that?
This is a powerful person who a lot of people revere, and it's just it's so surprising that people can function and succeed with this narrow of a worldview. But yeah, pour one out for that guy's publisher, because that book is not going to sell as warmly also, as like, I think they expected.
Also, like, guess what? It's 2023. The time and the era that you want, no matter how hard you fight, is gone. And we're all going to burn in Phoenix live at 120 degrees, bitch. So you might as well familiarize yourself with some black people. That? And that's rock and roll, baby.
So you might as well familiarize.
Yeah, you might as well with a black rock song.
Right.
I was going to say we're all going to burn in hell. Yeah. But it's Burning Phoenix.
It's Burning Phoenix. I got to go listen to the interview because you can tell he's sort of musing to himself. Like Marvin Gaye, he keeps making it worse and digging a deeper grave because he's like, okay, who could I have included? Marvin Gaye? No. Stevie Wonder? No. It's like Little Richard? No. Sir. Terrible. Is this man okay?
No.
Survey says no. He'll be fine. But this, it's clear his un-okayness is on full display with these egregious comments.
I feel like there's only been one okay man in the history of all men okay, right?
And I can't remember. Yeah, one or two.
I think one, I know we've said someone was okay before.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who or why.
I think it was another old person who stepped down.
Oh, I can't remember who it was. Yes.
It was another old guy who was like, I'm too old, I'm gonna step down.
Person Ketanji replaced?
Mm-mm. No, that was years ago. We didn't have this segment yet. We've been doing this.
Ketanji Brown Jackson?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kennedy maybe said something like that, but I'll look back in the archives. Maybe we'll, again, when we do our retrospective, we will reflect on the only man that has ever been okay. Something tells me
if anyone remembers who was okay.
Which man was okay? That is our show. Until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.